Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight is Thursday. It's officially 8:01 p.m. Mountain Standard Time here out of Cascade, Montana. And I am your host, Kirillis Givendaugh. You're listening to Mind Mix in the Evening, and one of the broadcast shows out of Mind Mix Radio. Today is September 29th, 2016, and our website can be found at mindmixradio.com. We have listener links on there. If you'd like to share any of the links, go right ahead. Feel free to grab them from the website. They're right there on the first page. And we have the chat room open this evening. The chat room is at mindmixradio.chatovod.com. And we have, my son is monitoring it for me this evening. A dedicated listener may not be able to join us this evening. She's got some things that she needed to get done. But we do have the chat room open. And I will be taking questions from the chat room if anybody would like to stop in there all evening long. We are going to break up our show this evening. The first 2 hours will just be myself. And then on our third hour, we have scheduled Michelle M. Deschamps. He's from Ontario, Canada, and he will be joining us in the third hour to talk about an online free archive with UFO and contact case files and documents. So, you know, if you're just joining us, please hang in there. This is a 3-hour show, and our guest will be here in the final hour.
Don't touch that dial. Stay tuned.
Mind Mix Radio.
Greetings. You are listening to Mind Mix Radio. Mind Mix Radio is talk radio heard on audio and icecast worldwide. Our currently scheduled shows include Mind Mix in the Evening, with Kirillis Givendaugh, featuring talk, news, analysis, research presentations, and special guests. This show airs Tuesdays and Thursdays, 8 p.m. Mountain Time, to 11 p.m. Mountain Time. Our daytime broadcast is Mind Mix Mashup, featuring unorganized music and paradigm audio. This show airs Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Mountain Time. Mind Mix Radio, broadcasting out of Cascade, Montana, is a product of the unacknowledged paradigm, sharing information on such topics as political corruption and activism, the New World Order, new technology, eugenics, exopolitics, including past and present historical documents and current event news. Other audio heard on Mind Mix Radio includes the unique and rarely heard, from the filk genre to gaming favorites, as well as a small selection of old-time radio, and the work of various paradigm researchers and alternative news networks from across the net. Our website is mindmixradio.com. Our archives at audio.com are always free. Our chat room is mindmixradio.chatova.com. And our social media platforms include Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and unseen.is. Don't forget to like and share Mind Mix Radio. Now back to our show.
Radio.
What's this?
Coming up next.
We'll be right back.
Okay, well, newforce.com is basically the first letter of the following words: Northern Ontario UFO Research and Study. So it's N as in Normand, O U S as in study. And basically, it was originally an idea for a book, but not knowing how to lay out a book, somebody suggested, well, maybe then you should create a website. And a friend of mine and a good colleague who just recently passed away was my web host, an original of the pirate radio days, gave me the programs that I needed and over the phone talked me through the whole process.
Wow. And so how long have you been collecting all of this information?
Well, myself, I've had 27 sightings since 1974, and I started researching at age 10, a year later after my initial sighting at age 9. But I collected a few reports here and there through my high school years from professors and fellow students. The documents, or anything pertaining to documents, didn't come about until 1991 when I joined the Mutual UFO Network on the advisement of nuclear physicist Stanton Friedman, because I told him I had all this material and I wanted to know what to do with this, and he suggested that I join a UFO group at the time. So I did. But over time, I became disillusioned with MUFON. I felt that they sat on it too much information that they had. A good example of that is their recent show, Hangar One, which was canceled. And yet these guys have over 70,000 case files that should be presented to the public, not necessarily held up for ransom, you know, meaning necessarily making money out of it, or if you're not getting any money out of it, then you're not going to publish them. I don't feel the same way. If I can see that there's other archives online where the information is only at one location, I will actually do like Robin Hood. I will take that information, put it on my website, and unbeknownst to them, I will actually publicize where I took the information from. So they're getting free advertisement from me. But it's important to preserve this information for future generations, because I have no idea where ufology stands today. There doesn't seem to be a lot of educating being done in schools like I do. I do public presentations when I have a chance, for money and sometimes for not, because it's too important. This is my passion. And so I proceeded to get all, like, I was surprised to find out that I could get access to the Australian archive, so I've downloaded all their 10,000 documents. I managed to get, finally, the 9 so far downloads from the UK. I have documents from the Canadian National Archives, actually. I actually bought the 5 microfilm reels, but before I even attempted to even think about scanning them, somebody had already done a batch of initially 5,000 files, and later on I found an even bigger batch of 8,000 that included the previous 5,000. So I switched one batch for another. And I also have documents from the CIA, the FBI, the NSA, the DIA. And recently, a friend of mine, or source from Australia, has been able to find documents pertaining to the Vietnam War and some of the UFO occurrences there that were regarded as being unknown helicopters or unusual intrusions during the whole, you know, conflict over there. So it's a very good site, you know. I'm one of 2 people in Canada, or 3, that have actual archive-type-looking websites. Grant Cameron owns the other one called presidentialufo.com, which strictly deals with all the American presidents and what they knew and what they know about UFOs. And Chris Rutkowski has... He's a skeptic, mind you, but Chris Rutkowski does put out an annual survey, where I think we're the only country who puts out an annual survey of the preceding year's sighting reports that are sent in by people, observers, and sometimes the Department of National Defense. But I don't think he gets all the juicy cases either.
Wow. That is a tremendous collection. And, you know, I can attest that it is important to have multiple copies of archives out there. And the reason why is there is most definitely an element in existence on this world that does not want truth available freely to the American public or to the world.
Exactly.
A couple of years ago, I ran into where a behind-the-scenes element took down a enormous living archive, essentially. It was a website forum that had, at one point in time, over 7,000 members. It was the Open Minds Forum. And they did a denial of service through the hosting company and took it down. And we finished a complete download of all of the members' information on the forum less than 2 hours before the final shutdown of the forum itself. And then it took us 6 months to get it back up online. It was a learning process. It took us 2 weeks to figure out how to do it, and then 6 months to figure out how to get it all back up online. But yeah, they tried to destroy it because there was information on it that was inconvenient for them.
Yeah, and it's going to be like that even more so. I think we may just start to see the slight quivers of them shaking in their boots, because there's going to be, I believe, there's going to be so much backpedaling, because however stupid I think it is, they seem to have the mentality that they can keep this secret forever. And this secret is so large, so encompassing for the whole world. And the visitors don't seem to be stopping from coming here. There may be some creatures that are making it here for the very first time still. And so I believe that in pertaining to disclosure, it's not going to come from the government's part. I believe it's going to be a more apparent presence of the extraterrestrials in our atmosphere. A situation similar to Independence Day, but without the invasion scenario. I don't believe there is ever going to be an invasion, because it would have already happened. And a lot of us would have disappeared already.
Yes.
If it was something like, you know, swooping down over supermarkets and eating us for food or something. It's beyond that. They seem to have more respect for life than we do. And so I think their mere presence, if they were to hover over all the major cities of the world for weeks on end, where people are driving their kids to school, or they're coming home from work, they're pulling over and say, holy, what the heck is that? And holy shit, we've been lied to for all this time. And that would start the trickle that would eventually lead to the floodgates of having an open discussion on this, and people finally putting their feet down and say, enough is enough. We want to know the truth, and we can handle it.
That's right. There is one of the things that my particular group is watching is June and July of next year. We've heard through the grapevine some years back that there's going to be exactly that sort of thing, a parkover that is scheduled for around about that time, and that it's going to be a 30-day parkover. And that it is... Are you still there? Hello, I think we lost him. Are you still there?
Yeah,
you are.
I'm still there.
Okay. It sounded like you almost cut out there for a second.
Oh.
Okay. So anyways, what we had heard was that there was going to be a 30-day parkover in June or July of next year, and it was going to be an initiative not controlled by the cabal. We talk a lot about here about the New World Order movement. And that's basically what we're referring to when we do. But that's one of the things that we have heard. And so what you're saying really resonates, you know, with me, you know, with regards to that, because it would be a massive awakening moment if it happened.
Yeah.
And then what people would want to do, they would want to go look at archives like yours.
Yeah, and anybody else's archive that's out there that's worth looking at, without having to turn to the conspiracy sites where a lot of the information might not be so factual.
Right.
You know, I don't put anything on my site. There's a few things that still just raised an eyebrow too much to just simply deny it because that's somebody because just because somebody comes out and says, "Well, I faked it." Well, I want just as much proof of fakery as I want proof for the reality of you know somebody's photographs. Let's say, you know, I want provenance or whatever. But there's a few cases I've seen, very few, that perked my interest on YouTube, for instance. A lot of the stuff is CGI. I can tell right off the bat. Because you can tell that the people who are putting the fake videos on YouTube have never seen a UFO themselves because otherwise they would know.
Yeah.
Exactly how to portray them and stuff. Because all I've seen on there is the kind of models we'd be making for science fiction films. You know? No, it's just people will realize, along with the skeptics, along with the debunkers, along with the fakers, that this is beyond them. That, you know, like the crop circle makers, the earth making ones. They've obviously, you know, realized that there's a lot more of these patterns that are made within seconds, created within seconds, and totally impossible to be made by man. You know, there's no damage to the plant. If you walk on the plants with ropes and boards, you're gonna crush the plant to the point where there's not gonna be any harvesting. But in the real crop circle patterns, which are the majority, not the opposite, people seem to think that the majority are fakes and very few are real. It's still the other way around. These things they've known for a fact for years that they're created within seconds. And that there's really weird molecular changes in the plants. The plants have become magnetized, which is an impossibility in itself. These are all side effects. Just like a landing of a UFO irradiating the soil 15 inches down, and yet the rest of the soil is unaffected. You know, and we've had over 3,000 cases of those particular landing cases. I've investigated one on Manitoulin Island in the Great Lakes in 1991. And I talked to Ted Phillips out of Missouri, who's the leading authority so far, as long as he's alive, about the landing trace cases. And he says, oh, yeah, after a while it gets boring because one seems similar to the next, to the next, to the next, to the next. Well, you know, it's beyond that now. There's observations and everything, but like I was beginning to say earlier, it's becoming more difficult now to distinguish between a real UFO and a man-made object because, yeah, maybe there's something that the military has flying around that may not be of extraterrestrial origin. But at the same time, what the hell would they be doing flying over some hick town trying to scare the shit out of people driving their cars at night on the highway that's isolated? It doesn't make any sense. The military may have, you know, fantastic toys to play with, but they don't go for joyrides. If you crash your only one working vehicle or whatever, it's going to be found out that they have these things. They're supposed to be secretive. They're not going to go flashing lights all over the place and pretend to be reported as a UFO. It doesn't make any sense, but some of my friends actually think that that's what's going on. It's the military. Well, we used to have a radar base here that was made famous back in 75, just as the same time as what was happening in Montana at Malmstrom Air Force Base. And that base is no longer here, so there's no reason for the military to be around here anywhere. And I haven't looked at the sky as much because I'm afraid that I may not be able to distinguish between a real UFO and something that's possibly man-made or a drone, whether it's one of those toys, a quadricopter like people buy or whatever. You know, people talk about drones in the States. Well, I have yet to see one even used by the police officers here to survey, let's say, a bunch of protesters. But I've also collected a bunch of photos of different drones to put on my website so that people can help themselves to distinguish between something that may do totally crazy maneuvers that even these drones can't perform. You know, man-made drones can only do certain things, and so far as I know, everything works and makes sound. These UFOs could be 50 feet across, 2 miles across, 10 miles across, and they don't make a peep. And so there's a distinction there, but those reports we don't see too much. Now, I'm still waiting for the next Phoenix Lights, and I know for sure there's going to be another next big event that may encompass even more than 10,000 people. So the next big sighting, it could be just around the corner, and I tell you, it's probably going to be seen by a lot more people than what was seen in Arizona. And hopefully that'll be the beginning of that awakening.
Yes, I think so many people are primed for it right now. And, you know, no one is believing much of anything out of the mouth of our government right now. And
no.
Oh, man. Yeah, I just spent the last two shows basically covering the Ukraine and what's going on there and how it's tied to the corruption. And the very same cabal is involved in the truth blockade against UFO and the contact paradigm. So sites such as yours are so incredibly important. Can you tell us more about what's actually on there?
Well, I basically put myself in the feet of somebody who would know nothing about UFOs. And so I thought, well, what other kinds of information or material should be on a website that I haven't seen yet? So I started creating pages like politicians and UFOs, scientists and UFOs, and oddly enough, we're getting small trickles of information leading to the fact that some of the paperclip scientists that were brought over from Germany, like Oppenheimer and Edward Teller and Einstein, you heard about flying saucers, but he didn't really do much about it. But I believe that Oppenheimer and Edward Teller might have been at some of the crash sites because they were the leading authority on nuclear anything back in the day. So who else would you bring in? Because back then, they thought that flying saucers ran on nuclear power in the 50s and 60s and 40s. So, of course, those scientists would be there. Another page I created was cops and saucers, everything to do with police reports. I also managed to get the audio archive off of Robert Gribble and now Peter Davenport, who runs the International UFO Reporting Center out of Seattle, Washington. And what other page? Celebrities and UFOs is another one I created. All the celebrities that ever had anything to say about UFOs or actually had sightings. There's a book called Rock and Roll and UFOs or something like that, where it's mostly rock and roll music people in the industry that actually had encounters. But I compiled that along with other information that I found. And if people start bitching at the fact that I don't have anything modern on my website in terms of UFO photos, it's because it's really easy to play with the digital photograph of today. Now, unless I know the photographer personally or I've met them in person, I won't post anything that's modern. Most of the old UFO photos I have on there have been analyzed to death. They used to have their negatives with them. They're famous cases by now in ufological history. And because, like I said earlier, it's so hard. If it's becoming harder to distinguish between a real UFO and man-made objects in the sky now, then I might as well just revert back and focus more on the ancestry or the history of UFOs and stick to the old cases, which cannot be corrupted. They cannot be modernized. You know, you got people or certain groups wanting to analyze the old photos with modern-day technology. It's not going to make a bit of difference. That photo was...
Yeah, that's a very, very good point. We're going to break, Michelle. We'll be right back. This is a bit of a long break, so about 5 minutes. Stay with us, folks. Welcome back, folks. I'm Carolus Givendaugh, and this is the final segment of our show this evening. I'm here with Michelle Deschamps of Ontario, Canada. We're talking about Nufors, NUFORS.com. It's a free online archive of everything UFO. He has a tremendous collection there that is available free to the public. And one of the other remarkable things that I found when looking at the website was that it was available in both French and in English. Michelle, are you still with us?
Yes, I am.
Wonderful. So you were going to tell us a little bit more about what is on your website.
So apart from politicians and UFOs, military officers and UFOs, scientists and UFOs, I also have astronauts and UFOs, pilots and UFOs. I have a nice page dedicated to pilots. Pilots are trained observers, and that's another thing. Somebody actually laughed at me because I said I'm a self-taught trained observer. The thing is, and when you do have your first or second sighting, you kind of, well, for the first 10 sightings, for instance, in my case, I actually would go through my checklist and wondered what it was that I saw, and then I would check it off and check it off and check it off. And then, after a while, you get to learn, especially if you familiarize yourself with the night sky or during the daytime. If you were to see a strange light at night and you go back out in the daytime and you see a new tower antenna there, then you know that that's what it was. So after a while, you can become a trained observer yourself. You don't have to be a police officer or an aircraft pilot or military officer. You know, I use binoculars whenever I can. And when reporting to the public or to the media, in my case, I have to make sure of what it was that people have reported, including myself, before going to the media. Because then if it gets reported or found out that it's, you know, it was misinterpretation or some hoax or whatever, then your name becomes mud instantly. And the one thing that is hardest to recover is a reputation. So you can become a trained observer. And so I've created a page, too, that's very important in left margin. And I hope everything works because, as I mentioned earlier, my web host, who was a pioneer in the pirate radio days, passed away in August, and we quickly transferred to a server in Bangladesh. But I've been having problems uploading all my documents and my PDFs and my videos and audios. So now I recently found somebody local, and so we're in a process within the next few days, because I'm off tomorrow and Saturday, to re-upload the site again. But some of the sites, the pages should work. And one page I created because I was frustrated that it wasn't anywhere at all. It's I call it UFO characteristics. It's in the left margin. When you click on there, it's how to identify UFOs in 30 minutes or less. But sometimes you have to stand outside, hopefully not in the cold, for hours looking at the object. And the only way to determine whether it's a planet or a star is if you go out on consecutive nights and look in the same general area and familiarize yourself with what you just saw. If it ain't there the next day after, then you've obviously seen something. But if it's there over and over again, it's either a planet or a star. Now, some people still don't know the difference between a planet and a star. A star will flicker or blink because it's further away and gets easily affected by the atmosphere. A planet is much larger and closer, therefore it does not blink and does not flicker. So you'll see either Jupiter or Venus. Those are the two brightest ones. Saturn, I've never seen Saturn even with a telescope. Mars on a few occasions, but Jupiter and or Venus are the brightest two objects in the sky apart from the moon. But with this page, I go by 8 criteria: shape, colors, sound or lack thereof, size, speed, behavior, level of eye strangeness, and duration of sighting. Now, this was a page that needed to be created because I'd never seen it anywhere else. It was nowhere else could you see something that could explain to people what to look for in a UFO sighting if you were to see one. And then there's also a place where it says click here for theories and false explanations for UFOs. So you go on that one, and there'll be photographs of weather balloons, temperature inversions, the aurora borealis, moon dogs, sun dogs, all these atmospheric phenomena that have been reported over the years, so that people can distinguish and see the difference between that and what could be a real UFO. So that's another first for any website anywhere, is I created that page so that people can teach themselves. Another one is the UFO occupants page, where I've separated all the sightings that were made in close encounters of the third kind, which is just simply the observation of small occupants next to a landed craft, separated from the ones that are the repeat offenders, the abductors, the people, the aliens that come here and take people out of their bedrooms or out of their cars while driving and abduct them for a couple of hours and bring them back. So that was another first. Nobody's had ever separated or even listed how many creatures had been seen. I've got 85. The U.S. military says they've classified 57 species. Well, I've got 85, and those are separate from the abduction performing ones, the reptilians, the praying mantises, the little grays, the tall grays, the Nordics, which are very similar to humans in appearance, but more muscular, more robust, and so on. So even a page on Majestic 12 explaining the 12 members of that group. Audio clips page has recordings I've done of local people. Here in Sudbury, to give you people a short synopsis, I was born in northern Quebec. I'm French-Canadian. Mm-hmm. My dad moved us here in 1968 because we have the two largest mining giants in the world, I think. Initially, they were called Falconbridge and Inco, but now it's Inco Valley because they were bought out by Brazilians. And Falconbridge is now Xstrata. I don't know who owns them, but two largest mining companies. This is a site of an ancient asteroid impact or meteorite impact. And so on, and I don't know how large it used to be. I think it was 200 miles. At the rim, around the rim of this asteroid impact is where all the mine shafts are located. And we have one of three neutrino labs in the world. Ours is the deepest, I think. We 9,000 feet or 9,000 meters in one of the abandoned mine shafts. So there's a lot of reasons for why UFOs would be here, because if we were exploring a planet where there's mining technology and military technology, that's what we would be observing first. It would be sign of pollution in the atmosphere. That is usually sign of civilization. So I've created all these pages. So, and then because I was in Sudbury, I didn't know we had such a history of UFO sightings. We came here in 68. The entire world had already survived an entire year of sightings, which was 1967. In 69, when we went to the moon, and I remember that vividly because I watched it on TV with my dad, that's where my interest in outer space came from.
Wow.
And then from that, I never knew that I was going to have UFO sightings, mind you, like years later when I grew up, because we moved in 1970, we bought a house 20 kilometers north of Sudbury, and that's when I had a sighting when I was 9. And then after that, my next sighting after that, was in my 20s, and it was at that same famous Falconbridge radar base, which was made famous in 1975. And that sighting was in October of 1990. I'm actually coming up upon the anniversary of that sighting. And it's also depicted in sketches in another page that I created, which is my personal sightings page, just above the sightings archive link in the margin. So there's a lot of pages I've created that I couldn't see or never saw on any other website, and it was lacking. It was lacking information that just infuriated me. And so, because I work with skeptics that have never had any experiences, whether it was ghosts, Bigfoot, you know, whatever. I've been investigating or researching the Bermuda Triangle, apparitions of the Virgin Mary, ghosts, Bigfoot, and UFOs since age 9, 10, 11. And I decided, well, let's pick one of those topics and study it in depth And sometimes I feel I bit off more than I can chew.
Well, it is an immense genre. You know, the way you have organized the information and these different pages, you've done a lion's share of work for, say, someone who's writing a book, someone who's doing research on particular cases where they need to look at related cases or similar types of cases. I noticed that you even have an encyclopedia of terminology and abbreviations and a kids' corner. I've never seen that sort of thing for anyone anywhere. You know, an encyclopedia like that or a kids' corner, you know, something that suits the youngsters who are interested out there.
Yeah, the kids' corner is not quite finished. I was trying to figure out if I should have some kind of like space-related crossword puzzles. I try to scan them, scan the pictures, let's say, and the people would then be able to print out the crossword puzzle that dealt with space topics or whatever. I still am looking for some of those, but yeah, there's the other page you mentioned. So there's kids' corners, and then the terminology one. Was something else that was fascinating to me. I gathered most of the stuff from books I have. I have a huge book collection which I buy because I know the more reputable authors and the ones that are not so reputable. Because when I pass on, I'm donating my entire collection to the local archive or the library or whoever is going to take my collection here. But you're right. My website is basically for the benefit of mankind. It's not for Canada. I don't even pledge my allegiance to Canada. I pledge my allegiance to the planet. Because from an alien's point of view, we're all the same. We come from the same planet, and there shouldn't really, deep down, be any reasons for us fighting amongst each other. And yet, the people who would love to meet extraterrestrials, they have to think twice about that because, you know, we're not ready to meet them. If we can't get along with ourselves on this planet, how the hell are we expected to get along with something from out there?
Yes. You know,
we have a lot of growing up to do. We're still just barely making it over the bars of the crib.
Yeah.
Whether it's space exploration or whatever. And yet people are so arrogant to think, oh, we can do this. Oh, the military is good for arrogance. The military is really good for that. You know, oh, we can do that just because we know we can. Or whatever. Well, that's fine. They have all these toys. We've given them all this funding, but now we're paying it. We're paying for it, aren't we? Because we're being lied to by all the stuff that they have or have not.
The arrogance that they think we can't handle it is the part that irks me the most. I mean, what makes them think that they can handle it that we can't handle it? You know. You know, they come from us, and the amount of training is actually irrelevant. It's, you know, it creates a rift when you divide a people by what they may or may not be able to do, when you don't leave the door open for potential. And we're seeing a lot of that today. One of the things that I've seen, I mentioned earlier, the demise of the original Open Minds Forum. One of the things that I seen back then was a lot of animosity and desire for recompense over the 70 plus years of a truth embargo. There's people out there who want blood over the truth embargo. And, you know, it causes problems on both sides of the fence when people think in terms of you know, hiding the information because somebody may or may not be able to handle it.
Yeah, and it's and you know what's even more surprising too is to find out that actually the military is scared. In some cases, where jets were sent up for after some of the objects, whether it was the Phoenix Lights or the Stephenville, Texas sightings, one pilot had to be helped out of his seat because he was terrified. He was shaking. They turned back. They couldn't. They flew up to this object, and it was so large and so vast. They turned around and turned tail. And it's like that tells you right there, yeah, they think they're so big, the big kid on the block, but then when they're faced with something that they don't stand a chance. Whatever technology we have today, even to defend ourselves, if we have weapons of that kind of scale, that you know, yeah, we might be able to knock a few UFOs out of the sky, but you'd be tickling the dragon's belly, you know? And I don't think I'd want to do that, because God forbid we ever meet a race like the Klingons, let's say, out of Star Trek, who couldn't care less. We'd be such easy pickings for a conquering race to come over and be taken over, you know? Never mind the freaking elite and one percenters wanting to own us and rule over us. We could be easily taken over, you know, by something out there. Let's say, what if there's an alien race out there that's looking for sanctuary, and they're being pursued by their own enemies, who's even more powerful than they are? You know, we'd be screwed. So it's like, you know what? You got to take it from the angle of you know, being more benevolent and less malevolent. And I believe that in the entire galaxy, we're probably the cruelest race there is. The cruelest race there is. You know? So it's, we've got to tone it down, otherwise we're going to get our asses kicked. And maybe we deserve it. Sometimes I say, you know what? We've done such a poor job of caretaking for this planet that maybe the aliens should have it. Maybe they could land, reclimate the thing to its pristineness and its originality, because we've made such a joke of the planet. We live on dump sites. We just keep all out of sight, out of mind. You know, even at my place of work, we've stopped recycling. I recycle 100% at home. I try to. It's just me, myself. I've never been married, don't have any kids. You know, so it's just, this stuff has such a hold on me that it's too important, and it makes you aware of other things. That's why I never thought that UFOs would be make me become an activist, an environmentalist, or an outspoken person. Like, I mean, public speaking is like one of the most terrifying things that most people talk about. But yet to me, I'd love to be able to speak in front of 400 people about this stuff. I do PowerPoint presentations in preparation to go back, because we had a fraud from the city, from the states, that actually came up here once to do two lectures, two consecutive nights. The first night he showed up, sold some audio tapes and videotapes that were half filled or whatever, and then he took off the next day, never did his second presentation. And I knew somebody who actually paid and went and saw him, but I was more infuriated to find out that the media had been there. And yet, at all my presentations, I'm a local boy, the media never came to my presentations, and they had a free press pass, whatever. And so I said, you know what? You went for some guy who just likes to write off the tale of other people's work. His name is Bill Nell. All the other UFO researchers have been on this guy's, trying to chase this guy down for years. I only found this out later, that I said, holy shit, if I would have known that, you know, I'm glad I didn't go to his lecture, because I would have thought, oh, this guy knows more or just as much as I do. Turns out that if you're using other people's information and passing it off as your own, you don't know a whole lot. But I'm also finding out that with all the research I've done, the more I look into things and how the real world works, I'm realizing that I don't know much at all. And it's a school of life. You're actually learning everything. Every day you're learning something. It never stops.
So it becomes an enlightening process, essentially, when you embrace the journey, you know, through subjects like this.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I've had my own process, I think. You know, a lot of people would term, you know, what I do conspiracy theory. But it's one of those things that the more you dig, the more you find. And like you mentioned with ufology, you know, the more you learn, the more you realize you don't know and you need to know, you know?
Yeah, yeah, so, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a funny situation, and it's like, I wish people could just, I wish your eyes could almost record everything it sees, because a lot of times, even with videotape or cameras or whatever, it never quite justifies what you actually saw with your eyes. And you kind of wish that people could see what you saw and they'd say, holy crap, this is not from here at all. I mean, you know, I've never seen occupants. I've only seen UFOs, but I know people personally. One guy who worked at INCO at one of the mining sites, he's actually had three or two observations of beings on board their hovering craft. Mm-hmm. And so when you talk to people like that, and he's the first one who's actually listed on my audio clips page. His name is Don Campbell, but his license plate says UFO Don. And him and his wife had an encounter with a particular being, and they know how to disguise themselves. Their vehicle it was riding was looked like a car, but this was 1975. But the car looked like a futuristic model for the time and the year. And he was bowling with friends of his that were police officers. And so he came up with a story that he was either run down by a drunk driver or whatever, because he couldn't say he was an alien. So they looked up for the license plate, and there was no such license plate in existence back then.
Wow.
And so he knew right there, and he wanted to chase after this odd-looking car, but his wife had heard about all the abduction reports, and he never did go after. But he was a skeptic in the 50s, and he had heard about this famous landing at one of our mine sites, where a mine worker walking to work every day encountered a landed UFO, and there was three 13-foot-tall beings, and that caught him in some kind of hypnotic stare, and it made the front page of the paper. And I heard the story. I had heard the story from three different sources who did not know each other, and he was a fourth one that actually investigated the case when he was a skeptic, and he actually rolled up to the area and saw U.S. military personnel in one of those funny banana-shaped helicopters with two props, taking soil samples. This is 1954, the month of July. And a week later, he went back, and the whole place was taken. Everything was taken down and made to look like nothing had happened. And yet, I've got the front page article story. I recently, with the search of all these PDF documents, I found a whole slew of old UFO publications, and I found another written report about the same case. So if you listen to the audio clips page, the clips on there, he's got a lot of stories that are first-hand, second-hand, third-hand, and then other people I've recorded. There's one story, of course, the John Lennon sighting that he had in New York City in 1974. As soon as I get all this stuff up and running, well, hopefully most of it is already up and running, but transferred over to my new server, which is local, it'll be a lot easier to manage then. I'll be back on track adding some new sighting reports, so the latest sighting reports for 2016, because I also have a sightings archive from 19, if I look on the page now, it goes from 1995 to 2016. So whatever local sightings or even sightings elsewhere that are out of the ordinary, I will list on there. You know, it's important to keep track. I can't keep track of everything, but, you know, we do our best.
Right. You know, tracking it by years as well, you could probably see trends. One of the interesting things that I've noticed, I've had some interesting, unique experiences as a communication facilitator, encountering some curious parties online. Let's put it this way. I could not say whether they were or were not 100% human or non-human. But they had some very interesting things to say. One of them was that one of the, supposedly, according to them, one of the races is now in open conflict with one of the other ET races. We're going to break. Michelle, I hope you can stay over with us for the next... Oh, no, this is the end of our show. I'm sorry, I'm not paying attention to the clock. Thank you so much for coming.
You're welcome.
We got to do this again.
Oh, for sure, for sure, for sure.
Mind Mix Radio.